Hello, this is The Link Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel #LinuxShow. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. Want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
It's December the 10th, 2002. It's Tuesday night, and we're back, and we're live, and most of us are here, I think. Did Doc call in yet? We'll give Doc a buzz, but most of us are here. We're back from our kludged up move. Well, I shouldn't say we're back from. We haven't even done our kludged up move yet. So hopefully the next couple of weeks won't present too many problems for continuing the show. All we can say is sorry, everybody. That's what happens when you're dealing with lawyers and companies for, you know, mortgage companies and things like that. Things can get confusing. So it's been a crazy week for Kevin the last several weeks. Hasn't it been, Kevin?
Oh, it's been insane. But they're predicting an 80% chance I'll be moving this weekend.
An 80% chance.
It sounds like your closing's being done by weathermen.
Basically, well, yeah, I think they just found some guy wandering along the highway that they're using for a mortgage broker for the people buying my house.
Actually, Russ, Kevin is dousing for a mortgage, so it's kind of related to the same.
What is he dousing with?
I have no idea.
I could say some things, but I won't because I don't want to get Kevin in any trouble. We may have listeners in government places. But we are back here. We'll continue as the course of the first segment goes on to prod Doc and get him to call in. But in the meantime, let's bring the other guys in and say hi. Well, you were already talking, Arnie, so hi, Arnie. How you doing?
Fine. How you doing there, Jeff?
We're doing well. Really glad to be back. I was just talking with you during the break that the quarter's started. You've got a whole new flock of students. And
No. We're in semesters.
Oh, you're in semesters?
Yeah. So the semester doesn't end until end of January, and then we start all over again.
See, that's the advantage of the quarter system, is you turn them over at a much higher rate.
Well, you turn them out, yeah, get rid of the bad ones maybe, hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. We in education continue to plod on day by day. Russ, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in here in the ice and snow of the Northeast.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you literally buried with drifts around your house?
Well, it's I have a very expensive lawn ornament at the moment, which is one of the cars that we had to park on our front lawn during the snow, because the way our town works, you can't have cars on the street in a snow emergency, and we don't have enough parking space. So this thing is still stuck there. It hasn't been able to get off the ice patch on which it is sitting. It was interesting because I was in Boston last week when the snow hit, and so I ended up spending more time with my mother, who lives up that way and whom I was visiting at the time, because I could not get home after the main storm hit. So I'm glad to be home, and in fact I think they're calling for freezing rain for us tonight. Oh boy, oh joy, black ice in the morning.
Man, who?
Oh, you got the car parked right between the stone lions, huh, Russ?
The only lions we got around are the small furry kind that eat out of a bowl. We got a bunch of cats, but no stone lions. No.
Well, it's been surprisingly mild here in Chicago for the winter so far, but I should really keep my mouth shut.
This is a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems that there's sort of this, what do you want to call it, the lake god on Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan sits in between Illinois and Michigan and a part of Indiana, and there's this just minor shift in the direction of the wind that comes ripping down the length of Lake Michigan, which is the difference between Illinois getting dumped on, you know, 4, 5, 6 inches of snow every day, or if the wind shifts over a couple of degrees, it's Indiana and Michigan get 4 or 5.
It's the Grand Rapids.
Right. And it just, for some reason, the wind has been in a slightly eastern direction, and so we have been spared. We've had our share of snow, but we haven't had any feet yet. We've only had it in doses of a couple inches at a time, and a couple inches at a time in Chicago is cakewalk for us. I mean, it's nothing. And it's only when you get it in, you know, 2 feet in 12 hours that it really... those are the days here in Chicago when life is miserable. But let's go ahead and jump right into the first segment of the show, and I'm going to turn it over to one of you guys to start off so I can sort of prod Doc in the ribs and find out where he is. So I'll duck out into Webley land while you're going. But, Russ, you sent me a whole bunch of stories today, so why don't you get started with some of yours? Take it over.
All righty. Well, my first and most interesting one, I think, was the Enterprise Linux Forum. And for those who haven't heard about it, if you haven't heard about it, chances are you haven't been to the Linux Today page recently, because they had banner ads on there for the past month. It was sponsored by, what are they called this week, Jupiter Media, which used to be Internet.com, which is the parent company of Linux Today, and it was a very interesting forum. It actually reminded me, it was a two-day forum in Boston, and, you know, how many people really want to spend 2 days in Boston in December? I mean, really. It's cold, it's icy, it's no fun. But the interesting thing about it was it reminded me very much of the first Atlanta Linux showcase I went to, which was back in 97, in that the trade floor was trivial. It was all
crepe
and very small.
But,
hi, Doc.
Hey.
Doc has made it.
We're on the air, Doc.
I know. I'm driving people to an ESF party in the city. And I don't have my thing that tells me what your number is or anything, so here I am.
Okay.
So I don't. You know, it's going to be pretty hard to do it.
Okay.
I've got two other people talking in the car.
Okay. Why don't we call you back a little later then?
Okay. Yeah. That would be good. I have your number now. Can I call you on this number?
Yeah. Sure.
I can. Okay. Because I've captured it as a 312 number. I'm glad I had it because I don't have access to, you know, anything that tells me where to call. So,
okay.
But I was hoping, you know, my original plan was to call it a hole, but then Corey came over and says, got the CFO party going and so.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you later, Doc.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okay. Go ahead, Russ.
Okay. The interesting thing about the show was that it had kind of the pipe and drape affair, and it's very small show floor. It's just one little room, and not even really filling the room. But the key to it all were the sessions. And unlike Atlanta Linux Showcase back in 97, the sessions were 100% business. And I mean 100% business. And I was talking to Brian Proffitt from Linux Today afterwards, and he was saying, gee, you know, do you think we should have some technical sessions? And I said, frankly, I don't think you need it, because this was for business people. And I did meet several people there who were not technical at all or were only so in a minor way. They were trying to find out how open source and Linux could be used effectively in their business. There was one fellow who was actually, he was like a marketing manager of a small software company, and he was just trying to get an idea of what all this might mean to him. And I think he seemed like he came away with an awful lot, because people were communicating on a business level. So it was, I think, a very interesting little show. I think they probably had somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe about 400 people. I know that they are they have in the works a West Coast show coming up in, I think, about 6 months, and then tentatively going back to Boston in the fall, possibly even Washington, D.C. instead.
I really hope they do add a Chicago stop on that tour as well. But now I also talked to Brian about this show probably 2 or 3 months ago, and when he had first invited us to come as a group. But of course they could not afford to fund the Linux show showing up, because they're running this thing on a purse string. As you could obviously tell when you attended. It's very humble. They had like zero advertising budget other than what they're generating off of their own websites. Which is nothing to laugh at. I mean, Linux Today is getting 400,000 page turns a day now. And so that's reasonably good exposure, but, you know, it really doesn't reach the business community very well. But it was a good start. People, you know, they hear a number of 400 attendees, but really 400 attendees for a small first-time show is respectable.
It's very respectable, and also keeping in mind, you know, we really are talking about December in Boston, which is really not the desirable destination for that time of year. In fact, my mother lives near Plymouth, and so I was staying out with her and visiting with her, and I missed the first morning of the show because I woke up and there was 4.5 inches of snow on the ground that I knew nothing about. So by the time I unearthed my car and found my way to the commuter train, etc., you know, I was just so late it was ridiculous. So I mean, that's one of the reasons why people don't want to go to Boston at that time of year. But on the whole, I think they did a rather good job, and it seemed like the attendees were very clued in. They were very attentive, and most of them seemed to be very appreciative for the information, and that's what you want. And the other thing I would note too is that it was a new crowd, and this is kind of interesting, because the last couple of Linux worlds I've been to too, I'll take a poll before doing my talk, and say, how many people is this your first Linux show? And every time, the overwhelming majority, it's their first show. It's their first time through. And that's where we need to be with the business shows at this stage in the game. We need to have new people. We need to have people who are just trying to figure out what all this is about coming in through the doors. And they did that. So inside that regard, I think that they succeeded very well.
Yeah. And hopefully they didn't lose too much money. Now, the context of the conversation I had with Brian was that, ironically, a couple of the major media players within the open source community really do have an opportunity sitting in front of them right at this moment. And it's an open door that, you know, is going to close fast and probably won't come again. Maybe not ever again, but at least for a couple of years. And that is the fact that, in all likelihood, Key3 Media is not going to be here this time next year. And that's like, what, half of the trade shows, the technology trade shows in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really does provide an opportunity for a company like Jupiter Media, or, you know, even the people at OSDN to put together their own shows in the context of an Atlanta Linux showcase, that kind of a focus with a lot of sessions at targeted markets, be they tech or business or whatever, and start carving out niches so that the people in the community can tell the story, rather than have some marketing twerp from Key3 Media try and tell the story for us.
You remember, Jeff, back in the early days, the old Apple Fest?
Oh, yeah.
Those were great. And what they did was they had a lot of sessions, but it was also informal, and it was basically like people helping people. And the reports came out of some of those were really, really phenomenal. I mean, they weren't real big at first, but then they got to be real big.
Yeah.
But then corporate took over, and then it was...
Well, it really, and I'm going to get my ass in trouble here because, you know, what happens if Key3 Media doesn't die? But it really pissed me off, the arrogance of Sonny Saslaw, who was the guy who was put in charge of everything Linux. And he didn't know anything about Linux, didn't know anything about the community. He knew nothing about software development. He knew nothing about hardware development. He knew nothing about consumer electronics. The only reason why he was there, to see how much money he could wrestle away from small companies within the Linux business. Now, and I don't fault anybody for wanting to make money. I want to make money. Kevin and I have a business to make money. But Key3 Media's attitude toward the Linux community absolutely sucked. And they did things that were a terrible disservice to the Linux community with their Linux Business Expo that was a companion with all the Comdex shows where they would take the Linux vendors and shove them way off in a corner, if not even in a separate building from the rest of Comdex, primarily to make Microsoft happy. But I'm really pleased. I just can't, you know, say enough that I'm really pleased to see Jupiter, although Linux today does have some of its own problems. I'm glad to see at least they're trying. So keep going. Anything else, Russ?
Yeah, there's a couple other ones, and you can find the links on the website for those who are following along in IRC and so forth. But one of the big things that sort of appeared right at the beginning of the Enterprise Linux Forum was this Microsoft-sponsored IDC paper claiming that Windows has a lower cost total cost of ownership than Linux. And you know, it was an amazing thing, and in fact, just before my session, what's his name, Dan Kuznitsky, I think that's the pronunciation, from IDC had his session, and Brian Proffitt went there and he talked with him, and I could not bring myself to do it, because at that point, frankly, I was just I was afraid I would be so infuriated that I would pop my cork for, you know, during my session, and I didn't want that. So I actually laid off, and I talked to Brian afterwards, and he said that he, you know, kind of put it to him a bit, but apparently a lot of what has gone on about the Microsoft claims, number one, are largely Microsoft's doing. You know, IDC did some research and came up with some numbers, and Microsoft put the numbers together and built an argument around it, basically. The second thing that he said that he understood was that they were actually, the IDC folks were actually amazed that the Linux numbers came as close as they did to the Microsoft numbers. And that's because, apparently, as I understand it, when you have several companies having to provide functions and services versus one company doing the whole nine yards, I guess they've determined that historically you can get a better deal sometimes out of that one company that's doing the whole nine yards. And so the fact that, that these things were a horse race was kind of surprising to them. I think I have not seen the actual paper at this point. I'd like to.
I've seen snippets of it. And from the snippets, and granted, I have not seen the whole paper, but from what I have seen of it, I have gathered two at least temporary conclusions, and that is, number one, as usual, Microsoft cooked the study because they set up the series of conditions in the exercise prior to handing over the information to IDC. And an example of what I'm talking about is, you know, they're talking about total cost of ownership, and they conveniently leave out major cost issues such as Microsoft arbitrarily determining they're going to discontinue support of an OS or a product, and that you are then forced to upgrade. And these are costs of doing business with Microsoft, and they are not included.
The other thing that's really bad, Jeff, is that they're presuming a five-year cycle. And, of course, this is totally, and this just shows how fake and what a bunch of garbage the whole study is, because you tell Microsoft that you're not going to renew your licenses for 5 years or get the latest greatest thing every 5 years, and Microsoft they wouldn't be able to make money if everybody did the 5 year cycle. You know, so it's just rank hypocrisy on Microsoft's part to put out this study like this. It's rubbish.
Yeah, you really can't blame IDC, at least from what I've read.
IDC is telling the people what Microsoft, the data that Microsoft is giving.
Yeah, they're reporting based upon data furnished.
That's right. And you know, but Microsoft, of course, has cooked the books. And 5 year, like a 5 year cycle is going to be realistic, especially when Microsoft wants you to upgrade every 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just the rank hypocrisy. Yep. You know, it's
got any more, Russ?
A couple quickies. One is a story once again on the Linux Show website. Says Sony dumps Microsoft for Star Office, and this one is interesting in that it says that I guess Sony computers, largely in Europe and I think in Asia, are going to have Star Office included in them rather than Microsoft Office. Now, granted, I have seen cheap or free add-ons of Corel products for years with certain PCs, but this is the first time that I've seen Star Office being associated with a major vendor.
I understand, and I really don't have a lot of corroboration to put forward. This is just one employee, and it's a low-level employee of Sony. So I really got to get this substantiated by somebody higher up within Sony. But I have been led to believe that this decision was made in part that, number one, there's presently no love lost between Sony and Microsoft because of the situation between PS2 and the Xbox.
Now, who would believe that?
Okay, and Sony is considering right now filing a case with the Department of Justice because of the accounting numbers that have come out on the Xbox, and that they have lost $753 million over the last 2.5 years on the Xbox. Mm-hmm. And that here we go again. Every third advertisement you see on TV is for the Xbox. And where did Microsoft get the cash to buy those ads? Well, It's not rocket science, folks. Look at their own accounting. They got that money from a monopoly. And here again, they are spending hundreds of millions of dollars in an attempt to try and acquire a market when presently they have lost almost $1 billion. So there is consideration that that might happen. And so you've got that love loss issue. Plus the fact is that Linux is popular in Japan already, as it is all over Asia. And so there's a lot of StarOffice users already in Asia. And so Sony's computers primarily sell in Asian and European markets. They don't sell here, do they? Yeah. How many Sony computers? I mean, you do see some, but I mean, you walk through most offices, and you're going to primarily see Compaq, Dells, and Gateways, right? You are. And that's just the way it's been. And the advantage of going to StarOffice not only benefits them in that love loss issue, but it also benefits from the issue that they can put that product on either a Windows-based machine or a Linux-based machine and have the same user product, which I think that's smart.
Very much so.
I think that's real smart. Gives them a unified product line with different operating systems. So that's good thinking. And again, this is a low-level employee talking to me, and that's why I can't even give the guy's name. But I will endeavor to substantiate it. Any more?
Just one quickie, and that is the Mandrake Refugee Program. People who own operating systems other than Linux can very simply qualify for a special $12.50 edition of, I guess it's Mandrake 8.1 or 8.2 boxed set.
Yeah,
I guess it's
a commercial product.
They're liquidating some of their old stock, basically, at a bargain price, and it comes complete with the manual and so forth. I think this would be a very nice way, a very inexpensive way, to introduce people to Linux, with complete with the box and all that sort of stuff in the manual.
And throwing a few bucks at Christmas time towards a Linux vendor. So.
Yeah, so I think that's just a very neat thing. So that's it. I'm done with this one.
Okay, Arnie.
How you doing there, Jeff?
Yep. You have any stories this week?
Oh, yeah. First of all, a couple little items. The CRN, which is Newsweekly for Builders of Technology Solutions, has been having a talk about an that IDC study, and there's some comments in the letters box and on it, and they're all Linux oriented. People coming back and debunking the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. What's really interesting about this is Microsoft, had that study early on, the original Halloween letter, and they said in that letter that that FUD isn't going to work, but it sure is, hasn't stopped them from trying it. But it doesn't work. I mean, the more they squawk and lie and create their deceptions, the more Linux gets promoted, because the Linux crowd is always there to debunk it all. There's a new NEC server based on Linux, and it's NEC is advertising it as the first only Unix or Linux OS that offers fault tolerance, which is critical for ensuring data integrity. It looks pretty nice. It's again, this is from CRN.com, and they have about 100 solution providers in North America, and which came from the Unix side of the business, and that's how they're getting this thing started. It looks like a pretty nice little box. It's small, but looks very nice. Also, CRN.com has Red Hat CTO Michael Thiemann, a big article in the print edition. It's on page 61. and he's talking about security via tackling government accounts. And one of the things that he's addressing in the government account thing, and this is really one thing that I'm picking up here, and that is, you know, there's a whole bunch of regulations to get to sell to governments. And I guess
you aren't kidding.
Pardon?
I said you aren't kidding.
And yeah, and one of the things that Red Hat is doing, and I'm really, really happy to hear this, is that Red Hat is going to, within a year, meet the NIAP criteria for their Linux operating and distribution. And that is just good news, because one of the things that Linux, I think, has really fallen down, at least in this country, is use within the federal government. And I'm sure it's in a lot of closets and stuff, but you know, really nice to you know, other than the post office, to land some front, you know,
well,
front office stuff.
Seeing as you're talking about that, I'd like to give everybody a URL that did not make the website tonight, and hopefully I'll get this URL posted up to the site on a semi-permanent basis, at least for the next couple of months. But it's for a new .org. Well, it's not a new .org, but it's the Center for Open Source and Government, and their URL is egovos, so egovos.org. And again, this is the open source for national and local government programs. This is an organization that is co-sponsored by various departments within the federal government, including the Defense Information Systems Agency, Department of the Navy, some overseas organizations, some people from the United Nations, the GSA, or General Services Administration. So it's not just in closets, Ernie. Okay, it is starting to come out of the closet. And
I know that. It's just that there's not been any
really
high visibility.
Well, that's why it's important that this URL get out there.
Yeah.
Because there's a conference.
I've been to that site, by the way.
Okay, there's a conference being held March the 17th, 2003, and in particular what they're looking for is for people who are believers in open source that can address very specific topics for government, to go to their website and sign up to be a leader of a session or to participate in some way of getting open source into government. And so go to the website, go to the URL, take a look. And in particular, there's a call for papers section that is looking for people to step up. And I'm sure Russ will probably go there tonight, right, Russ?
I've been to that site before, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't mean to step on you, Arnie. Go back and pick it up where you were.
Okay. Well, that's all for that one. Another interesting thing is IBM just shelled out $2.1 billion for Rational Software, and this is Grady Booch's outfit for, you know, software engineering applications, and that was an interesting purchase. I just thought throw that out because IBM's such a strong Linux supporter. It was, I think, probably a good move on their part. This next story is from Network World, which is one of my favorite news rags these days because they seem to have a good balance and they seem to have cast off any bias. I mean, they do have plenty of Microsoft stuff in here, but it's, you know, it's fairly balanced treatment. And they do have some increasing Linux content these days. For instance, in this week's issue, they do have a full page feature on Linux Enterprise Linux Forum. And one of the interesting things about this issue is in every issue they have this news bits page. And at the you know, they where they have these little small news stories bulleted on the page. And over on the right side of the page, they always have this little column called the good, the bad, the ugly. And what they do is they feature three little stories, one which is good, one which is good, one which is talks about something bad, and then something that talks about something downright ugly in the industry. And our own Russ Pavlicek has rated a mention in the bad segment.
Oh, really?
Yes, and here it is. And this is on page 6 of Network World, and if you go to the website nwfusion.com, Network World Fusion, nwfusion.com, I imagine you can get there. There is this bulleted item under the bad. FUD alert. Consultant Russell Pavlicek speaking last week at the Enterprise Linux Forum Conference and Expo in Boston about fear, uncertainty, and doubt surrounding open source software. Quote, and this is quoting Mr. Pavlicek, in the past 12 months, Microsoft has gone from being a non-issue in the FUD world to being the issue, unquote. There you go, Russ.
That's about it, yes.
Bad.
In fact, I accuse them of having monopoly on Linux FUD.
So
you've in the last week you've slash dotted your website.
Yeah, yeah. My bandwidth went through the roof.
And you rate a proud mention in Network World Fusion of your comments.
Now, was that your website at work or your website at home?
It's my work website. Yeah. But I still hate to see what my bill's going to be. I think I exceeded, the plan that I'm on, but we'll have to find out.
Well, but can't they take a joke?
I would welcome people listening should pay attention to CRN.com and WFusion.com. As other sources for industry news, because they both seem to be coming along as other sources, and I still read eWeek and InfoWorld and all the other good ones. But you know, it's nice to have a balance and find some other sources. So I've been dipping into those recently, and
okay,
they've been pretty good.
Okay, Kevin, have you got any new releases this week?
Yeah, there's a new release of Mozilla 1.2.1 and. What I was most excited of, under their RPMs, there is a set of RPMs with XFT support, so you can finally get decent anti-aliased fonts under GNOME with Mozilla. It's been extremely cool. All they have readme the warns of lots of bugs. I haven't run into any serious problems with it.
Okay, anything else?
That's the big one for me.
Okay.
There's also, from Real Networks, in their Helix project, there is source code available for their video production tool, although I haven't had a chance to play with it yet.
Yeah, I've actually heard that they've been getting some big news on the major technology press the last couple of days for continuing to release more and more open source code. They've not only got the attention to us people in the trench, but they're now starting to get the attention of people outside of open source as to what they're doing with their business plan. So I think that's pretty cool that they're starting to get people to take a serious look at why Real has become converted to an open source model. So, okay, cool. Well, I got a couple of quickies that I'll bring in prior to the break because I know our guest is already here and want to make sure he has plenty of time. But first of all, I'd like to sneak in a couple of these quickies at least. First one is if you go to the O'Reilly website, you will see a very, very in-depth interview with a good friend of ours, Tim Perdue. Tim has been on the show several times both prior to being a part of VA. I think he was at Linux Care or something. I can't remember. It goes back so many years. But Tim was on prior to his time at VA, and then during his tenure as I don't know whether you want to call him lead developer or co-lead developer, whatever, on the SourceForge project. But there's a very interesting and in-depth story at O'Reilly about the trials and tribulations of SourceForge, what went wrong and what went right, and the announcement of GForge. Tim got his, of course, like this was tough to do, he had his hands on all of the source code prior to walking out the door, even those bits of source code that were eventually closed up completely with the commercial product. And he has put them all together into the product GForge, which is similar in nature to the project management tool that was being worked on by the Debian group.
We ought to get him on the show.
Oh, he is, yeah. He will be on the show sometime in the next few weeks, probably right after the first of the year. I want him to get some time to actually finish a product so that we can have something to look at, not just talk about trials and tribulations. This coverage on O'Reilly is plenty in-depth enough for everybody to figure out what happened at VA with the SourceForge team. It's very funny. It's typical of businesses that things happen the way they did, that a group of people quietly working in a corner did really good work, and then everybody in the company tried to take credit for it and take it away from them. It never fails. That kind of stuff always happens in big corporations. And the people who actually did the work, did the cool things, end up getting squeezed out. And so it's a really interesting read. So everybody go over to the O'Reilly website, and I'm sure you'll have no trouble finding it at the O'Reilly website. There is also one of the things that I posted in the headline for the show tonight is Microsoft potentially getting into the Linux software business. I had first heard of this as a maybe, I would say back in the middle of summer. And there are a number of people within Microsoft who have been using Linux on their own machines inside of the company to actually do their development and code writing on. So they're very, very familiar with Linux inside Microsoft. They're not stupid people. And we like to pretend that they are, but they really are not stupid people. And just like the history with Apple, that there has always been this very spiteful, very hateful relationship between the Windows community and the Apple community, the irony of that is the largest software vendor within the Apple community is indeed Microsoft. And Microsoft will continue to make products that do not necessarily, you know, follow their own corporate policy of making everything pure to Windows. I mean, there's been versions of Word that have run on Unix for years and years and years and years and years, and there will, I'm sure, continue to be Word for Unix systems available. And so because of the large amount of critical mass now starting to be achieved, there are more and more rumors coming out of the Redmond area that Microsoft is taking a second look at that critical mass that's forming and not wanting to miss out on the potential of the software revenue. If they, you know, okay, they've lost the operating system revenue, they can make it up with software revenue if they pursue it. A lot of what's driving this is indeed the rather remarkable sales continuing to go on at Walmart and Sam's Club. I have my first numbers. I'll actually have a quote, I hope, by this time next week out of Walmart. But the initial numbers they are giving me in terms of monthly sales is they are doing, on average for the last several months, 7,000 units a month off of Walmart.com.
Not bad.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
Not bad.
And so because the numbers are in the high single thousands per month, they are indeed rolling out at stores across the country. They are no longer hiding that. They've tested it in a couple of markets. The tests have been very successful. The store managers love it. And little by little by little, they are starting to deploy machines in retail. They were apprehensive about doing retail prior to Christmas. At least this is the feeling I'm getting, because they really weren't geared up for the distribution of dropping it into, you know, how many Walmarts are there in the United States? 30,000? And if they sell one a week from each store, that turns into hundreds of thousands of units in a month they've got to distribute. And that's a lot of volume to just go from zero to 60 on. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see this sort of delayed until after the Christmas sales. But I am told that there's one here, there's a Walmart in the western suburbs of Chicago that is selling Linux computers retail right now. And I haven't found out which one it is. Hopefully somebody will email me if they've been in the store and actually seen it. But, again, the spin through on all this is a company very similar to IDC, a company called the Meta Group, has predicted that, according to their resources, that Microsoft will be selling Office for Linux by calendar year 2004. And not at all surprised. Why don't we take that, and we'll take a short break. Let me get myself organized. Maybe we'll do a couple of quick stories before when we come back. But let's primarily jump into segment number two and talk to our guest. In the meantime, Kevin, cut on a tune, and I want to talk about that link on our website that appeared. You can tell us about what that music is all about. But everybody kick back, relax, listen to the tune Kevin puts on. We'll be right back with segment number two of the Linux Show for December the 10th, 2002. Hang in there, everybody.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make the Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out SourceForge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
Sometimes it gets so confusing, I just go back to sleep. standing at a crossroad. I don't know which way to go. So many things I want to do with the things I know.
The Linux Show, Part 2, for December the 10th, 2002. We're back. We're going to jump right into segment number 2. Asked around if anybody had important stories to talk about. I have a few more, but they really can't wait till next week. So we're going to go ahead and jump right in to our guests. I'm going to turn it over to Russ to do the propers. So, Russ, take it away.
All righty. Our guest tonight is Eric Penny. And he is with the Open CD Group, which is theopencd.org. Find the website. This is accompanying the announcement of their first version 1 ISO of their software. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. First off, I should say, because I'm sure someone in IRC is going to call me on it, obviously this is not a directly Linux subject, but it is related because of all things, you are distributing software that runs on Windows. Ooh.
Yeah.
Now, how about if you just give us an idea of why you would be distributing software that has to do with Windows? What's the big deal?
Well, honestly, last year I was stuck in Windows 2000 for a while, and I needed to have some tools that I could not afford. So, I, of course, at one time, I used a whole that nasty P word, pirated software, and I switched over to all open source because, well, it was free and it actually everything worked for me in Windows 2000 using open source software. So, I thought, well, gosh, you know, we can build a CD like this, but that was late in my wife's pregnancy, and I had a lot more time on my hands, so I never did do anything about it. And then a gentleman, Henrik, wrote an article for NewsForge that was talking about making an open source software for Windows CD. So I thought, well, gosh, you know, I should help out with this. But I also found out since then that it's really nice when my family calls me up and says, we got the latest virus, and we don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, you know what? I got this CD. I can come over, and I can I can fix that virus for you, and I can make sure you never get another one, at least as long as you don't do certain things. Stupid. So that's kind of why we did it. But that was my reasons why. Now, their reasons why was they liked to show off open source software, and they know how powerful it is, and that we believe that we don't need to use proprietary software to do 99.9% of the things that everyday Joe user does. So that's why we started it.
Yeah, I think, frankly, it's a really neat concept that, one of the biggest blocks to entry to the open source world is the notion that, jeepers, I have to do major surgery to my machine. I have to load this foreign operating system, and I have to do repartitioning, and I got to do this other stuff, and I got all this stuff to learn. And I think this approach, where the bar to entry is dropped to the floor, that it's open source software running on Windows, allows people to try this and to understand that this stuff is good quality software, and it's not it doesn't have flames coming out the side or anything else of the sort. It's quite usable and approachable. And I think this is great, especially in the business world.
Yeah, well, the major catalyst that really let this thing take off was the release of 1.0 of OpenOffice and 1.0 of Mozilla,
mm-hmm.
saying that, this isn't beta software anymore. We can give this out to people, and they don't have to think, oh my gosh, it's 0.99, even though I know that half of Windows software is just labeled 1.0, and it's not beta. Heck, it's even alpha.
Right.
So it's a numbers game, and if people can see that, there's quality, stable, open source software, then there's really no reason not to use it. It's either that or break out your checkbooks and go to Sam's Club and pay for the software.
It's even more than that. There are very specific niches that you're filling with this that Microsoft really doesn't have a product to offer. At your website, which is www.theopencd.org. And one of the applications that's on there is PuTTY, and PuTTY is on 0.5 something, and has been for years.
Yeah.
PuTTY's great, though.
And probably will never be improved, but it works better than Microsoft's Telnet app, and it is a secure shell application on top of it. And just because you've got software here that's theoretically not a 1.0. It's some of it's pretty good software. What virus software were you referring to?
Anything except for Outlook and Outlook Express. Basically, I'm pushing my family away from Outlook and Outlook Express, pushing them towards even Eudora. But if I can get them to Mozilla with its email client, or even completely push them off of downloading their email, because most of them have a DSL connection. They don't need to do that. But no, we don't have any virus protection software on the CD.
Okay.
Because there really isn't an open source virus protection software that we found.
See, that's what I was going to ask, because I haven't seen one.
No, there's one, but it's in development, and it's mainly for research purposes, so that doesn't fit with our criteria for installing it on the CD. Now, we've included some other stuff like CDX and Audacity and NetTime, because we're shooting for the average user. My mom, my dad who doesn't even really know much past Solitaire. Just to so that they can load the software and they won't have to pay for it. Now, I really like this CD because a lot of the new computers coming out have Microsoft Works, which comes with Word and the Works spreadsheet. Now we can give people this CD that get those new cheaper computers that they bought this computer because it's cheaper. They don't want to pay all this extra money for software. We can give them this computer with a full-fledged open source Office program, OpenOffice.org, and they can have the full functionality, and they don't have to think that they got a ripped-off cheap software package.
So what else is on the CD other than OpenOffice? I see.
We did throw Abby Word on there. BNX Communicator is repackaged Mozilla because we're not actually the developers of Mozilla don't want to redistribute Mozilla as Mozilla. They say it is for testing purposes. They want Mozilla to be rebranded as a Netscape or something else. Now, I don't know if that applies to Phoenix or not, but the Mozilla suite of software has been rebranded BNX Communicator, and it says it's in version 0.8.1 on our CD, which I think is using Mozilla 1.0.1. But there's also FileZilla, which is an FTP program, PuTTY for SSH, WinVNC for a I've never really used VNC, so I don't know much about that one. But we also come with XChat for IRC. Audacity is, I think, a wave editor. CDX is a CD ripper to MP3. 7-Zip for zipping files, zip, unzip. NetTime to sync your computer clock. And Win Privacy Tray for PGP. I don't know if that's PGP or GPG that one does. And then there's a couple other ones that I really honestly don't have a clue what they do.
There's always a couple that you don't have.
I can probably dig you up some emulators.
Yeah, we actually had some interesting shakedowns in the first couple months where we had two forums going, an email list and things like that, and across all of those different things, we had a whole bunch of programs suggested, and some of them I think got lost just in the shuffle of switching from site to site and through the email list. But since this latest release and the great Flashdot link to the NewsForge article, we've had a lot of good developers come online to our newest forum. And
that's what you need too.
Oh yeah, and we got a couple. Originally, most of the work was done by selling it, Will Martin and Henrik, but they since we've had this release, we have another few people really coming on to help us out quite a bit. One of them is Bill Simser, so that'll
now. Everything on this is for Windows, including the games?
Yes, everything on it is for Windows. Well, there's even some. I think we got the Cathedral and the Bazaar on there, and a couple other papers too.
Yeah, surprised because there's some of the game titles on here I knew were open source, but I didn't think that they were ported to Windows, that they were Linux exclusive, but I'm wrong.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at that too. I didn't realize some of the software was available for both Linux and Windows.
Well, if it's a simple enough program, it's not that tough to port over. Very cool.
Well, during the break you mentioned, I think it was during the break, you mentioned that some sites have gotten hit pretty hard here as far as downloads. Do you have any idea of how successful it's been as far as the reception from the community?
Oh, I think it's been extremely successful. All of our feedback, well, not all of our feedback, there's always a couple trolls, but most of our feedback to it has been really good, and we've had a continuous stream of people joining our forum and suggesting new software. The I don't know how many downloads we've had so far. We don't keep track of that on the website, and we don't actually host the ISO on our own website. The mirrors take care of all of that.
Right. Why don't you give us a real brief outline of some of the things that we'll find on the CD?
Well,
the features, the big things.
Well, one of the things that we consider a bug and not a feature is that
No. I mean applications.
The big two, Mozilla and OpenOffice, but Mozilla is rebranded as BNX Communicator. Those are the big two. Those are what people say that, well, we can't do that in Linux, so therefore we won't switch over. So we're giving that option to Windows users to show them that, you know what, that's there for them. If you want to use it in Windows, you go right ahead and use it in Windows, and if you want to stay in Windows the rest of your life with these programs, you go right ahead.
How about GIMP?
The GIMP is not included, mainly because it is a, for Windows, it is a two-stage installer. You have to install GTK, and then you have to install GIMP. And we decided that was one step too many.
Yeah.
Also, the GIMP is not exactly easy to use. There is a pretty steep learning curve to it. But that is not as big of a step as having that two-stage install.
Yeah. But like Photoshop is easy to use.
No, but it's a one-stage install.
Yeah. Have you thought about anything like LAME or some of the LAME stuff? Because a lot of people use LAME on Windows.
Yeah.
It is a phenomenal encoder.
Yeah, currently we're going for the average person that doesn't really do anything but download their MP3s legally or illegally, and then plays them. But our next release is going to include a lot more of those things. We wanted to include a lot more on this CD. I mean, we have 650 to 700 mega CD that we can fill. And right now, with all our binaries, the source, and the extra papers we have on there, we're only at 300 meg. So there's a lot of room that we need to fill up. It started in the summer, the whole project did, and it died down really fast at the beginning of the school year. And so we thought we kind of needed a shot in the arm, so we cut off all new program suggestions and said, okay, this is what we're putting on it. Let's go with it. Let's get something out. And Will Martin busted his butt to get an installer put together and work out the bugs of that and put the CD together.
But you may want to follow the path of some of your emulators that you got there, because there are some huge underground communities out there that do software, open source software, using emulators. Old Radio Shack diehards. You've got the Atari on your list. But there's lots of old platforms where you've got the crazy people from the 80s that have sort of gotten stuck in a time warp and keep on buying computers and running emulators on them instead of current software. But that will really open up the amount of open source software that you can offer.
Yeah, we had tons and tons of software that was originally suggested to us, and as you can see, I think only 12 or 15 of the software projects actually made it onto the CD. We had to cut left and right.
Yeah, well, you've only got so much time in a day.
Yeah.
And that I understand.
That was...
Not a criticism.
We're also...
Nice.
It's
really nice that you have Abby Word, too, though.
That was... Yeah, that kind of surprised me. I really wasn't expecting that one to make it, but... they released their 1.0 version, so we kind of said, well, let's go for just a word processor instead of the whole...
Yeah, it's a nice word processor.
Yeah, the whole kit and caboodle. So we left that one on there. Our next release, we want to maybe have like a developer's release with some IDEs and some other developer... related things, definitely an MP3 encoder, AUG encoder, Zinf. We don't really have much of a media player on there right now. So that was my son. He's saying hi to everybody. Next, we're going to definitely put Zinf on there, which is the renamed FreeAmp, I think. So hopefully our next release will be a full CD, and we may even have enough stuff that we can put all the binaries on one CD and the source on another CD, and then maybe have a couple distributions of the CD, one for the everyday desktop user, and then one for the power user, developer type of person.
Okay, so tell us where we go on your website to order a CD.
We don't really have a way to order it right now. I'm making them. I went out and I bought one of them nice CD stomper things with stickers, and I am the main distribution point right now.
The labels cost more than the CD media.
Yeah. But I don't charge too much. I'm really fair.
Okay.
So we're working on that, though. We'll probably do an order through using PayPal or something like that. I don't know. I've only had an order for 10 CDs, so that's... I'm not really... ramped up for mass production yet.
Yep. Well, maybe the next time you get slashed out, if you got the sales tool hooked up.
Yeah. I have pop-up ads, except for that the people will be hitting it with Mozilla and we never see the pop-up ads. So,
just capture their IPs and send them spam mail.
Yeah.
Send a root at IP address.
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool. Well, thank you for coming by. We are up to the time. It's 9:15, and it's going to be interesting to watch your development. I was excited when your project was first addressed to my attention by Russ, because I think that tools like this are very, very helpful for people like me to... helping to get the open source message down to people who don't use open source products now, and I think this will be really, real helpful towards my advocacy. And let me know when you do have the CDs available, because I'm going to order a bunch of them for our school so we can spread them around the school to the various IT teachers.
Yeah, well, maybe post something in the forum, and I'll respond to it. And our main goal was just to really to show off that open source software to the Windows world. We all know that Windows desktops, 95% of the market now. So
for the time being,
yes. I use Debian on my machine, Debian with a KDE, and I am just
here.
I am just in love with it.
Just
I can't
give Walmart time.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually pitched that to a few people too, hoping they'll.
Yeah, Walmart's got the Mandrake machine. It's really inexpensive.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought that would be an awesome system.
Yeah.
Even with
all sorts of stuff.
Even though it's just an 800 megahertz system, you know what? I use that same processor.
800 megahertz Duron, and I've got one of those. It's great.
Well, the cheapy one is a VIA processor.
Yeah, yeah.
C3. And that's what I use at home.
Yeah.
No problems.
No? I have an old Cyrix machine, Pentium 1, that I'm still using. Believe it or not. Run 133 megahertz.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. File server.
Well, you can run a good Linux-based firewall on one of those.
It's 64 meg RAM. It's all right. Right now it's running Windows at my mother-in-law's, but I've got a new box to replace hers, because she complains it's too slow. And I'll take it, I'm going to take it to school and put it on there as a demonstration server for the students. That'd be just fine.
I don't want to make us run too much longer, but I just started a job at a new company, and they use embedded Linux in a battery monitoring system. And I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska, the middle of, well, pretty much the middle of the Midwest. There's not a lot going on out here.
Foreign.
And I went into this company, and they use Linux all over this manufacturing facility. All their label printing is done with diskless workstations booted off the network, running Red Hat 7.2, I think. And I walked in, and I'm seeing all these GNOME desktops everywhere, and I'm like, whoa, I couldn't believe it. The main office still uses Microsoft, but I just couldn't believe how yeah, I just couldn't believe how much Linux was right there in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Just wait till the end of 2003. We'll be talking a completely different story.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, that is it. We're up to the time. So it has been great. I'm glad to welcome everybody out there listening to the show back. We will endeavor to not take these inadvertent disappearances like we have the last 2 weeks. Hopefully the future move of Kevin's will go smoothly, and we will be back online same time next week. We'll at least keep our fingers crossed and hope that that's the case. So until next week, on behalf of the whole crew, and hopefully we'll have Doc back next week too, on behalf of the whole crew, we are out of here.
So you need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? Well, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor. Check out the folks at www.littlebluebox.com and buy their stuff and sponsor. Yes, you too can sponsor The Linux Show. Here's an example. Insert your company name here. Is a valued sponsor of The Linux Show. Here's another example. Insert your company name here. Is bringing you this special segment of The Linux Show. Now, thanks for checking us out and sponsor The Linux Show.